following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Joining us now, Dr. Rick Fisher. And Rick Fisher is a senior fellow on Asian military affairs at the International Assessment and Strategic Center. Been on our show many times. The president now, within an hour of landing in Hanoi, his big diplomatic effort with Kim Jong-un, North Korea. Dr. Fisher, good to have you. What do you think about the president's opportunity with Kim Jong-un? What do you look for, sir, in this summit coming up?
John, thank you for having me on again. Look, the president has made clear that he is looking for, shall we say, limited progress in moving Kim Jong-un down the road towards eventual nuclear and missile disarmament. He has stated repeatedly that he's not going to push Kim Jong-un on denuclearization to an excessive degree. What this means is that perhaps, yes, some progress may be made during the summit, but the essential threats and challenges will still be there when the president comes home. And in my opinion, this necessitates that the United States take full advantage of the president's decision to leave the 1987 Intermediate Nuclear Forces Agreement and start to build up the American long-range strike missile and missile defense arsenal in Asia, and to share that technology with our allies so that we can deter to a much greater degree North Korean aggression and Chinese aggression.
So, Rick, listen, the president going there trying to find a way to get potential denuclearization. All the Democrats blasting him on this, the party of diplomacy now is the party of, I don't know, don't meet with people, saying that it's never going to happen. What is President Trump's risk here?
Well, all North Korean regimes have promised to disarm or reduce or mollify in some way, and they failed to do so. And president after president has left negotiations, come home, declared some kind of minor victory, only to be disappointed by the North Koreans. Now, President Trump certainly understands the stakes and certainly came out strong in 2017 and 2018 and has truly forced the North Koreans to pay attention to what they need to do in order to live in peace with the world. The big question is whether President Trump is willing to move from his original goal of a quick resolution, a real capitulation by North Korea in terms of giving up its weapons, or whether he is willing to shoulder the burden of intense bargaining with a country that all it does is bargain for the rest of his first term and probably his second term.
Dr. Fisher, let's get to the realistic expectations of this summit, which is going to start tomorrow, end on Friday. What is what in your mind, sir, is a victory for President Trump?
Well, a victory would be the beginning of North Korea destroying both its nuclear weapons capacity and its nuclear weapons delivery capacities. That would be destruction of nuclear weapons, destruction of factories that build nuclear weapons, destruction of missiles, destruction of factories that build those missiles. This, however, would require the cooperation of China. China is intimately involved in North Korea's nuclear and missile capacities, and both the Obama administration and, sadly, the Trump administration have not addressed sufficiently the Chinese contribution to the North Korean nuclear missile threat, and we need to do that. We need to be sanctioning several Chinese companies that we're not sanctioning today that are directly assisting North Korea's nuclear missiles.
Well, in 2 years, the president has not been able to get the Chinese to do that. In fact, they play lip service, right? I mean, remember when this whole thing started, President Xi said, yes, we're with you on this. We're going to put pressure on the North Koreans. And then we find out that 3 months later, they tripled their trade with them. So that was a complete lie. And that's what the Chinese do. They go to meetings and they shake their head and bow and tell you what you want to hear. And they lie to you, and then they don't do anything. And then they just buy and stall for time until there's a new president that comes in. I mean, they've been doing this since Richard Nixon went there in 1972. So what's going to change?
Nothing. That regime.
Thank you.
We're going to be facing this wall, great wall of opposition from China and North Korea, until the communist regimes in both Beijing and Pyongyang disappear. Now, going to war against one or both is not a very palatable option. It's not one that the American people will sign up for in the near term. But what we can do to move the ball down the road far more effectively, in my opinion, is to missile up. We're out of the INF Treaty. We don't have any medium-range or intermediate-range ballistic missiles in Asia. The Chinese have almost 2,000. Mm-hmm. We need to balance their threat and put enough missiles and tactical nuclear weapons back in East Asia to make it very clear to both the North Koreans and the Chinese, you attack South Korea, you're utterly destroyed. You attack Taiwan, your capacity for waging war disappears. Then we'll have their attention. Then we can make realistic demands that lead to real all-around disarmament.
So what you're saying, Dr. Fisher, is right now, until we re-up the missiles, we're not really in a position to do that, because that's all the Chinese and that's all Beijing and Pyongyang look at is, you know, what's your capacity in a given region. What you're saying, sir, as I understand it, is until we get that capacity, it's lip service.
Well, our goals are simply not going to be met. The North Koreans, right, and the Chinese are going to look at us and say, okay, we'll give you a few crumbs. We'll make noises and motions that,
right,
keeps your political system somewhat satisfied. But fundamentally, no, we're not going to get rid of our nuclear missiles. We need them for blackmail, for terrorism, for proliferation. Too bad. Until the North Koreans and the Chinese see that we have surrounded them with a new level of nuclear missile capability, they're just not going to take us seriously.
Dr. Fisher, I want to thank you for that analysis. Spot on, as always. Thank you for being with us, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now, Congressman Jody Heiss, he's from the 7th District of Georgia, Republican, and that is the Athens area. And he won election in 2014 when Dr. Brown ran for U.S. Senate, came in third, I think, or fourth in that primary. Jody Heiss winning that seat, former talk show host in Georgia. So we got to keep the little fraternity together here, Congressman Heiss. Good to have you, sir.
Great to be on with you guys. And listen, Georgia's 10th district. Now they changed it all around, but it used to be the 7th. Now it's the 10th. But listen, you guys were cracking me up earlier. I just got to say the difference, you guys are a whole lot smarter than me. So don't run for Congress. I'm sure you won't. But great to be on with you.
We got to come and do our show in your office because We do it once in a while in congressman office. I do it in Bobby Scott's office, who's my congressman in the
third
district.
I would love to have you. Let's work it out.
We're going to do that.
That'd be wonderful.
Because and get all three of us there because when we get Dan back in town. But I think it's a lot of fun. Congressman, look, I got to get you. There's so much to talk about today. First of all, the National Emergency Act, 13 Republicans voting it down. It's all for naught, right? The president's going to veto it. But look, if they're going to go after this bill, why not go after the whole thing, the whole enchilada, Congressman, in the 1976 National Emergency Act? Why put on a political stunt? Why not have a vote to get rid of the act that was passed before any of you were there in 1976?
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. You're hitting the nail on the head. That is the issue. There are really two issues here. One is a national emergency, and the other is the 1976 Act that gives the president the authorization to declare a national emergency. And there are two different things here that Nancy Pelosi and company are trying to tie together. There is no question, point number one, the president has the authority to declare a national emergency because in 1976, Congress gave the executive branch the authority to do that. And, of course, there have been in the ballpark of 60 declarations since 1976, eight or nine of them under Obama alone. In fact, one of them that Obama did was regarding the southern border. And, of course, no problem with that. The issue here is the president, who's in the White House. The Democrats hate the president, and they are determined to do anything and everything they can to harm him, to impugn him. And so now they're saying this 1976 Act is unconstitutional. But it's in statute. The president has the authority to do it. If we want to change that act, then let's go back legislatively and rein in the authority that Congress gave to the executive branch in 76. And frankly, I would be in favor of that as well. But as of right now, he has the authority, and I support him in doing so.
Great. I was going to ask you that question, Congressman. This is the Ox from Minnesota. And it's an honor and a pleasure to talk to you, sir. I'm glad to make your acquaintance.
Likewise.
I don't know if we've met before, but as a fellow talk show host, I imagine we've got some stories to share.
I'm sure.
But I'm glad you brought that up because that was my question. Is there an appetite to actually change this law? I don't know that we've seen a lot of presidents, you know, using it quite this obviously or mm-hmm. quite this publicly. Is this something, you know, after this is all over, is this a bona fide debate on this to maybe get rid of this law?
Well, I think perhaps there is. Dan, we were talking about this just this past week in the Freedom Caucus. And, the Democrats, as we all know, they're raising Cain over this thing right now. And I know there are a lot of Republicans, probably most, if not all, of the 13 who voted against the president on this. That was the issue. They disagree with the law and believe the law itself is unconstitutional. But the fact is it is the law, and it does grant the executive branch authorization to declare national emergency. So I think that perhaps there is an appetite to go back and try to rein this thing in, and I think now even the Democrats may be supportive in joining with us dealing with it. So that would be kind of comical.
Yeah. Has there been a Supreme Court challenge on this law at all?
I'm not sure.
No.
It must not have been.
No, never a Supreme Court challenge on it because, you know, nobody sued anybody over it. They just all went forward. But now what Pelosi and the Democrats and 13 Republicans want to do is cherry pick and choose what
right.
national emergency powers they want to give what president at what time. Because
right.
as the Congressman
right.
Jody High said, when Obama did it and Pelosi was there, there were crickets, right? She didn't say a word. He did it. I mean, he took national emergency to start a war in Libya and not a word from Pelosi. He started a war. National under the 76 Act and started, you know, bombing raids on Gaddafi, and nobody said a word, right? Pelosi was there, absolute crickets. John Frederick's Radio Network, Truckin' the Truth Across America. We're with Congressman George's 10th district now, Republican Jody Heiss. That's the Athens area. And the congressman, a former nationally syndicated radio talk show host and Dan Ox's hero in talk radio, and he's here from Minnesota, where it's minus 31 degrees, and he told me to stop whining about Washington, D.C., crappy weather. Congressman Heiss.
It's going to be 70 in Athens today, by the way.
So, I got to play this.
Congressman.
I'm complaining about the Washington weather.
Yeah.
I don't like
Washington. Minnesota.
I know, right? And he's showed me his thermostat outside, minus 31 degrees, and told me to stop whining when I do the weather. Congressman, hang with us a minute. I want to get Colleen. Let's get the cut four. I got to get. What is your take on the president's meeting here with Kim Jong-un and all of the Democratic criticism? I mean, why not give peace a chance? I thought that was their mantra.
Yeah, and again, it's the same answer as a while ago. It's because the Democrats absolutely cannot stand this president, and they're going to criticize everything he does, even when it's good for America, be it on the southern border or be it globally. They don't want him getting any credit at all. But I think this is one of the most spectacular things. Here we've got a regime of 80 years. This is the first administration ever to have a breakthrough with North Korea. In just 2 years of this administration, we are now having our second summit with North Korea. And it's just absolutely stunning to me, the progress that was made in the first summit. And I'm extremely hopeful that we're going to go even further in this one. I think the president is doing an outstanding job.
Fascinating that it was just yesterday, seemingly. I remember live broadcasts from Guam, when Guam was essentially going to be sunk.
That's right.
And that was going to spark a potential.
They were doing air raids.
Entire
air raid
hemispherical nuclear holocaust, basically.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden Trump is there and nobody's paying attention.
But the hypocrisy, Congressman Heiss, of the Democrats is what is amazing to me. I mean, those of you like Dan, Congressman, and yourself and me that you know, follow this stuff. I mean, look, remember, it's the Democrats who always say, we need to negotiate, we need peace, give peace a chance, diplomacy, don't do gunboat diplomacy. And now the president, that's exactly what he's doing. He's having a conversation, trying to get something done, and now they blast him before he even does it. Okay, I've now got a cut four here from Colleen.
Unless something fairly dramatic changes in the North Koreans' strategy, there'll be very little from this summit that is measurable in terms of progress. The testimony from our military leadership has been that the North Koreans are intent on pursuing nuclear arms, and something very dramatic is going to have to change for that strategy to change, and there's no immediate prospect of that kind of dramatic development.
Senator Blumenthal blasting the meeting before it even happens. I mean, what is up with these people?
Yeah, I mean, they just cannot accept the fact that the president is doing an outstanding job. I mean, listen, what have we had in previous administrations as it relates to North Korea? Absolutely nothing. Nothing. And here we have a president who has already come through one successful summit where the rocket testing has stopped since then. And now we're making more progress. But now I think it's brilliant even to be meeting in Vietnam, giving just a carrot in the nose of Kim Jong-un to let him know what could be some of the possibilities for North Korea economically if they would join the rest of the world and join an environment of peace. I think this summit has great potential for enormous progress, and again, I can think of no one that I'd rather have at the negotiating table than the president. His skills at this level are spectacular, and I just could not be more pleased.
Only guy on the face of the planet that could pull this off, and he happens to be our president right now. What a godsend in this situation for the whole planet, quite frankly.
I mean, absolutely. Yeah, but you know, I mean, the president now is having dinner, and the reality is these reporters, they're going to be eating their words. We have seen it in the past. The president goes to a summit like this, as he did the first time, and the same naysayers were out there talking about where this is going to end up in war, and I mean, everything that they were saying. Just the opposite happened. And so, listen, I just have confidence in the president and his skills and his abilities. Like you said, there is no one on the planet I'd rather have over there right now standing for us and negotiating. And I think we're going to see great results from this. And the fake news media at some point are going to have to eat their words and recognize we have peace in a region that we did not think it was possible just 2 short years ago.
John Frederick's Radio Network, live D.C., Trucking the Truth Across America. We're with – we only got a couple more minutes. We're with Congressman – Republican Congressman Georgia, former radio talk show host, Congressman Jody Heiss. He represents the 10th District of Georgia. That is the central Athens area. Congressman, I got to get to Georgia politics. I'm on advisory board member, Trump 2020 reelection campaign. I was the chairman of the Trump campaign in Virginia 2016. Congressman, the Trump campaign looking at Georgia as this absolute state they must win. Obviously, the very close race between Stacey Abrams and now Governor Kemp just a few months ago, putting Georgia in play. How do you win Georgia in 2020 for President Trump?
I think the president is doing exactly what he needs to do. I think he's going to win Georgia. Unfortunately, the race with Stacey Abrams, as you mentioned, was a lot closer than it should have been. But the president is extremely loved and appreciated in Georgia. I think he's going to carry it. There's going to be all of us out there fighting and running like crazy to make sure that happens. But, the main thing, I think the reason we struggled so much in the midterm was not because of the president, but because of Congress not doing what they said they were going to do. And I believe the people just did not turn out in that regard. I really don't think the midterm election was a statement on the president nearly as much as it was on Congress as a whole. I believe when the president is on the ticket, it'll be a totally different picture in Georgia, and I believe he's going to win it.
All right, let's get to Senator Perdue. Is Stacey Abrams going to run for U.S. Senate, Congressman Heiss, on the Democratic side? What do you think?
Well, we're hearing the same rumors that she likely will. She certainly has ambitions for some other office, whatever that may be. And I think David Perdue is doing a great job, but he certainly needs to be prepared for whatever Stacey Abrams may have up her sleeve. So now is the time to make sure you don't get blindsided. But I think Stacey certainly has some other political ambitions, and the Senate is one of those offices that is certainly being talked about right now.
Can you win the old Tom Price seat back that Karen Handel won in the special? And then I'm not a fan of her, so I just got to be honest. Can you win that seat back?
Well, I think we ought to be able to. At this point, there a lot of folks are getting in on that race. We're going to see what comes out of the primary, but hopefully we'll have a good, strong conservative candidate that we'll be able to get across the finish line. But that is a district that I believe we ought to be able to take back. There's no reason in my mind that we don't. And we've just got to, we've got to have the right candidate, and we've got to run with it.
All right, I got to read you two text here from listeners, and then I got to take off. Paul in Mechanicsville says, Dems who continue to publicly say there isn't a crisis at the border have no clue how stupid they sound to average Americans. Paul in Mechanicsville. And I've got one here from former Speaker Mark Burkholder in Atlanta, who says, Jody Heiss, one of my favorite congressmen in Georgia, doing a great job. So he got fans out there all over the place, Congressman, even former Speaker of the House Mark Burkholder.
Well,
what do you think of that?
That means a great deal, as you can imagine, always here, because we certainly get thrown at a lot, and it's good to have some good positive feedback and encouragement along the way. But, yeah, listen, there's no question what's happening at the southern border is an emergency. We've had hundreds of thousands of criminals arrested in the last couple of years, 90% of drugs coming across the southern border. We all know all the stats. It is an emergency. I fully 100% support the president in this emergency declaration. We have got to get our southern border under control, and I agree with the comments that you just read.
All right, Congressman Jody Heiss, Georgia Republican 10th District. Congressman, we got to have you back as a regular, man. As radio guys, we got to stick together. Thank you for being with us.
Hey, love to do it. You're welcome. Let's work it out to come to the office. But thanks for all you do. Keep the torch ablaze.
All right.
Talk Radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. An Alabama sheriff says at least 14 people are dead amid catastrophic damage from a possible tornado. More people are missing as crews search through wreckage and debris. Lee County Sheriff Jay Jones told WRBL-TV on Sunday that damage in his community followed a path several miles long and appeared up to one-fourth of a mile wide. The United States has officially shuttered its consulate in Jerusalem, downgrading the status of its main diplomatic mission to the Palestinians by folding it into the U.S. Embassy to Israel. For decades, the consulate functioned as a de facto embassy to the Palestinians. Now it will be known as the Palestinian Affairs Unit under the command of the U.S. Embassy to Israel. President Trump's nuclear summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un ended without a deal, but the White House National Security Advisor John Bolton says he doesn't consider the outcome to have been a failure. This is SRN News.
All right, here's the great selling point of Relief Factor. Well, actually, the greatest selling point is that it works for the great majority of people who use it. But the big selling factor is really this. You can get all the pain relief benefits of Relief Factor without the negative side effects of ibuprofen. A couple of years ago, with great sciatic pain, I would take ibuprofen a lot, and it helped, but the side effects were so awful after a while that I just had to discontinue use. But that's not the problem with Relief Factor. So that's huge. So if you've been using any form of ibuprofen, now you don't have to with Relief Factor. Go to relieffactor.com, check out the pricing, and please give it a try because pain is pretty awful. Or call 800-500-8384. That's relieffactor.com.
Single-family houses and apartments are the key to passive income, a.k.a. retirement. No one knows this better than America's most successful investor educator, national radio host, self-made multimillionaire, CEO, and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley. Del is sending his team out across the country. Meet them live in a city near you, one day only. Check the schedule and claim your seats at retireinfiveyearsorless.com. Attend for free. Register at retireinfiveyearsorless.com. Limited seating, unlimited potential. Register today at retireinfiveyearsorless.com.
Hi, it's Mac with Baker Glass. If you're having trouble finding a clear option for that new shower enclosure or a replacement for that fog glass, then call the Baker Boys or find us at BakerGlassInc.com. That's BakerGlassInc.com. Baker Glass, no one treats you better. Hi, this is Mac with Baker Glass, where we use our more than 32 years of experience to provide a complete glass service to all of our customers and a clear choice for you. See for yourself at BakerGlassInc.com. That's BakerGlassInc.com. Baker Glass, no one treats you better.
This is the spark that starts it. This is the oak that smokes it. These are the hands that pull it. This is the knife that slices it. This is our original slow-smoked pork. And Sonny's Barbecue is the only place you'll find it. Come get an original pork plate at Sonny's with pulled or sliced pork and either more pork ribs or ribs and smoked wings plus a side and bread starting at $8.99. Sonny's Barbecue, local pitmasters since 68.
To bypass the CNNs and the MSNBCs, to bypass the New York Times and the Washington Post, ABC and NBC and CBS. There's some fellow conservatives out there who are very troubled by this. They haven't even acknowledged what just took place. It's okay. They'll learn to understand. It's not about personality. It's about liberty. That's our watchword, liberty. And I'm very excited about this.
Mark Levin on Talk Radio, AM 600 and 101.1 FM, WBOB.
Joining us now is Maryland Governor, former Governor Bob Ehrlich, and author of many books. He's got a new column on an op-ed in the Western Journal called Bob Ehrlich. That's a former governor. Just how far left are the Democrats willing to go with a picture of Kamala Harris, who said the Columbus landing in 1492, right? Remember that rhyme you learned in the first
Columbus
grade?
Columbus sailed the ocean blue.
In 1492.
1492.
She said that's a crime scene. Joining us now, former governor, Republican, Maryland, Bob Ehrlich. Governor, good to have you.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. What do you think of our new our idea for your new Twitter handle?
I'm not
Twitter
touching
handle.
That one. Next subject. Trying to get me in trouble. I know you media types.
Gotcha. It's the gotcha question.
Not Larry Hogan.
No, come on,
that's funny,
we've
Governor.
We've been friends for 35 years, and we're very close.
That's good. That's good, Governor. We appreciate that. Hey, Governor, I was just in Maryland's God's country. I had an opportunity Monday night to address the Harford County Maryland Republican Committee.
Well, that's my old congressional district. Harford County, all the way up to the Pennsylvania line. That's a great country. Love Harford County.
We were in Bel Air at
Blair.
McGurk's in Bel Air.
Love it.
Yes,
yeah,
we were
very
there.
Solid party structure up there. Loved representing that horse country county for 8 years in the House.
So, Governor, get this. So I go there on a Monday night, right? This is like a Monday night, right? A Republican committee meeting. So I go to speak on behalf of the president's 2020 campaign. And normally you could go to these things, you know, Monday nights, there's like 25 people there. They got like 150 people.
Whoa.
At a committee meeting.
Wow.
I'm like, this big
impressive.
Time. That's,
now,
that's
I'm not surprised. People tend to see Maryland as just Death Valley when it comes to politics, as you know, and many parts of the state are difficult. But if you look at the actual geography, we hold a lot of local seats, county councils, mayors. The gerrymandering obviously has cost us at least one seat in the House, in the U.S. House. We only have one member. But in counties such as Harford, we do very well. And as I said, it was a great pleasure to represent that county. I'm not surprised at the turnout. First of all, it's you. You're a draw, right?
I would hope so.
People come from miles around.
Miles around. To come see John
obviously. And there's a lot of pent-up frustration. There's a lot of pent-up, not just frustration, but it's enthusiasm. It's the rights resistance. People talk about the left, and it's obviously the reason for my column. There's so much attention given over to this sort of uber-left policy agenda that is now been floated on a daily basis by the leading 2020 candidates on the Democratic side. But no one talks about the resistance from the right, which is just average people reading their newspapers or listening to the radio or watching TV or reading blogs every day now and going, what? Huh?
Mm-hmm.
How far left can they go? And that's obviously the genesis of my column.
Well, let's start with just a couple things. And the outrages of the week, and it is like, how far left are they going to go? Kamala Harris saying that Columbus Day should be scrapped in favor of People's Indigenous Day. And that the landing in 1492 in, I guess, Plymouth Rock or wherever he landed, that was a crime scene. She said, isn't that part of this whole strategy to just...
A crime scene that led to her running for the presidency.
I mean, it's like, what are they talking about, Governor?
Well, here's the most bothersome aspect to it. I know you both will agree. It's the attack on assimilation. Yeah. It's the melting pot. Suddenly, it is no more. It is not good enough. It's not the goal. I mean, this is not the Democratic Party. It's not certainly most Democrats I know. The assimilation, the melting pot, pluralism, that was our strength. We talked about it. Sometimes, by the way, we fell short, obviously. It was, to use a term they're using these days, aspirational. But it defined the country. It's why people still line up to come here. And suddenly it's no more. It's no more good with the uber left, with the progressives, and that's attacking the very foundation of our culture. So if they continue to do this, I think there's probably a very bad day in their future in November of 2020.
Well, then we've got, every day you've got something. I'll get into the new Green Deal in a moment, which is out of a comic strip in my view. But now you got an elected official. I mean, these are elected officials, right? Kamala Harris is running for president. She's a senator.
Yeah.
This is even hard to believe. You've got a congresswoman in Pennsylvania, 5th District. Her name is Mary Scanlon, freshman. Who says that, we played the clip two times today. I don't want to play it again. But she says yesterday she compares border security officials of the United States doing their job. She compares them to Germans in Nazi Germany compares them to Nazis.
Nazi analogies are just out of control as usual.
I mean, what is up with this?
Well, what's up with this is, again, a plank of the progressive left, which is borderlessness. It's national boundaries being suggestions rather than lines. It's an attack on our sovereignty. Again, it's an attack on a central tenet of the country. Mm-hmm. If you don't have borders, you don't have a country. Mm-hmm. And so, again, I do not – I have a lot of Democratic friends, obviously, traditional liberals, moderates, conservatives in Maryland. It runs the gamut on the Democratic side. This does not represent a lot of views of liberal Democrats. Can you imagine Hubert Humphrey coming back looking at this today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Scoop Jackson.
These folks are progressives.
Yep.
And to be distinguished from liberals, by the way, particularly on the issue of speech.
All right.
Again, it's a minority view, but it's getting a lot of ink. It's getting a lot of enthusiasm, and it's the propaganda on MSNBC and CNN every day, and the Post and the Times is real. And again, most of America is sitting back going, "What?" And as long as most of America is saying, "What?" we're okay. By the way,
well, let me ask you this, Governor Ehrlich, which is amazing, is that we have this booming economy, more jobs right now than we have people applying for the jobs, unemployment across all levels at all times, so wages up, taxes down, businesses expanding, small businesses expanding. We have this economic resurgence, manufacturers coming back, factories open, and you've got a Democratic movement that is advocating going to a socialistic state. You know, normally you get that when the economy, you know, if this movement was going on during the Carter years, the misery index, 25%, right? 13% inflation, 12% interest, 10% unemployment, right? Remember that?
Yeah.
The misery index. You know, you could kind of see it, okay? Let's try something else because we're in the middle of a disaster. The economy is booming. So what is the point here?
Well, I would add one item to your list, which is real wage income. Real wage income, real wage income, real wage growth, I should say, is increasing, and that is a great barometer. That's just average folks doing better. And when you throw that into all the other statistics that you mentioned, the economic scene is really healthy. It just is. What that's about is, again, this fight for the soul of the Democratic Party. The new agenda planks are, again, not traditional liberalism. They're progressivism. It's a wholesale attack on wealth and success and profit and markets and freedom. This is an anti-freedom movement. The denominator for the Green New Deal is an attack on freedom. And so it sort of makes sense if you look at it from that perspective, from that paradigm. So, again, the facts on the ground they're relevant. This is a college lecture at Berkeley. This is utopia. This is what we should, again, aspirational. You know, the Green New Deal, by the way, is not aspirational. We don't aspire to this stuff. Most people don't. You see some of the even progressives backing off and using this term. But it's an incorrect term in this context. People like their steaks, okay? They like their backyard barbecues. Again, if that's going to be a focal point with regard to this campaign, and we're going to hear these agenda items articulated on the stump, the president's looking pretty good.
We're with former Maryland Governor Republican Bob Ehrlich, and he's the author of many books. Also, just had an op-ed in the Western Journal called "Just How Far Left Are Democrats Willing to Go." Governor, let me just ask you something. Who do you predict is going to be the Democratic nominee for president? If you had to make a prediction now, who would it be?
I would have answered until very recently a Biden. But, again, given the course of this conversation, given the enthusiasm on the stump for Senator Sanders and this progressive, it's not just a movement now. It's a significant, is it a plurality? Or is it a majority? I don't know. I do know, again, it doesn't represent the majority of Democrats in the country, but they're mm-hmm. serious, they're aggressive, they're not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would have, until very recently, the past few months, I would have said probably Vice President Biden.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, I don't know. I just, again, in my heart of hearts, I do not see at this time still a progressive, a true progressive on this platform securing the nomination. It would be disastrous for the Democratic Party. Or actually, it may be the ultimate wake-up call if the president, should the president be reelected.
Well, I think the nominee right now is going to be Bernie Sanders. Somebody's going to have to beat him in Iowa,
then
they're going to have to turn around.
Can you say reelect?
That's right. I mean, he should have been the nominee. They stole it from him in 2016.
Fair square.
They stole it from him in 16.
And he was okay with it, by the way.
Yeah, and they stole Iowa from him. He won those caucuses.
I mean, the one thing about Senator Sanders, I debated him once on C-SPAN. If you're really bored, one day, you can see it. I think in 2000, I debated him on C-SPAN. We were both in the House, but he, despite the fact that it's never been terribly a coherent platform, he's been spouting this stuff, talking about this stuff, voting this way, advocating for progressive ideas when it wasn't cool. He was doing this a long time ago. So he's real.
Yep.
He's foundational. He's the real thing. But again, once people explore these ideas, I think they're going to say, I don't think so.
Well, that's why I think he's going to be the nominee, because if you just look at this, somebody's going to have to beat him in Iowa. He's got an organization there. And then they're going to have to turn around and beat him in New Hampshire. Beth Warren's already way behind him. If he wins New Hampshire, that's the end of Warren. She's toast.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he's going to go on. Now he struggled against Hillary in the South. Somebody might emerge, like Kamala Harris in the South or someone else. But then they started getting those Midwestern primaries. He's going to win them all. And so I think he's going to be the...
I think that's a very logical take on the election. Again, and if you believe the election should be about contrast...
It's going to be contrast.
It doesn't get better than this, right? Donald Trump against Bernie Sanders.
It doesn't. And both, look, I'm in Governor Trump supporter from day one for a very long time. I fought NAFTA with him. I fought many battles with him when we were very lonely Republicans back then. But look, the key is Trump's been saying the same thing for 40 years. Bernie Sanders has been saying the same thing for 40 years.
Agreed. So they both have bona fides on this stuff, and they both have sort of one common element to them, which is a willingness, an aggressive willingness to challenge the status quo, to challenge Washington assumptions, to challenge establishment principles. They both share that, and in that sense, they're both exciting candidates.
We're with former Maryland Governor Bob Ehrlich. He's also a former United States Congressman and a state legislator in Maryland. He's the author of a few books. Bet You Didn't See That One Coming, Obama, Trump, and the End of Washington's Regular Order. And he's also got To Turn This Car Around and America, Hope for Change. So he's got many, many others. So he's a best-selling author, former governor. And, it was interesting at the meeting in Harford County that I was at. It was just really fun to be there, such enthusiasm. And a lot of the committee members complaining about their governor, Larry Hogan, just complaining about him. And I said, look, this is what I said on stage. I'm like, look, you know what? Stop complaining about Larry Hogan, right? Because the alternative is worse. Who was the alternative? Like Ben Jealous, right?
Jealous.
So the alternative is worse. Well, he's going to run for Senate. I'm like, okay. So he runs for Senate and he wins, okay? So if he runs for Senate and he's Senator Larry Hogan from Maryland, Republican, he's going to vote with Trump, what, maybe 40% of the time? The guy that he's going to beat is voting with him 0% of the time.
That's the old Reagan test, right?
I mean, would you rather have
40%? But your point is so well taken. It's something better than nothing. Yes, every time in politics. It's not a game of perfect.
No. I mean, the alternative.
So whether it's 40% or 60% or 30% or 75%, it beats zero. And in Maryland, from the Senate, we always get zero support. Zero. Every time.
Zero.
Every cycle. For decades.
40% is 40 points better than zero. So what's your problem?
Well, again, in the Sun, you're talking about administrative officials. You're talking about judgeships, district court judgeships, appellate court judgeships, Supreme Court judgeships. You're talking about big-time important votes. So the Senate is a big-time important body. So if you can pick up votes in that body, do it.
I mean, you know, the pre-Larry Hogan governor, the former governor that ran for president, he was two terms, and he rained down, you know, some of the most liberal left-wing policies that Maryland's ever seen. That's why we call it the People's Republic of Maryland. So Ben Jealous was as liberal left-wing as he is. So
but
as you said,
the problem is for Governor Hogan, for me, for any Republican who happens to get elected governor of Maryland, it is a legislature. It's a very hard left, and it certainly limits your ability to do things. You can kill some things, but it certainly limits your ability to be proactive.
All right. Well, are you going to the conservative political action?
You may see me. I'll let you know. I have a busy couple of days here, but I love that convention. I remember the president. It's probably 14, 15. I'll never forget him walking down the hall with his entourage and the excitement and me thinking, what, this guy's running for president? I mean, we know each other a little bit from past dealings when I was governor, and he brought this beauty contest to Maryland. And I'm thinking, you know, but the sense of excitement that surrounded him that day, this was a couple years prior to the campaign, when no one seriously was talking about him running for president. I'll never forget it. I'll never forget the reaction to him at the speech. I'll never forget him walking down the hallway there with all the radio guys. It was serious enthusiasm.
That was 2014.
14? Okay, it was 14.
It was 2014, and he had flown up from Mar-a-Lago.
Remember
he was
that?
At Palm Beach.
Yeah, yep. It was something.
Yeah, he flew up from Mar-a-Lago, and he made a phenomenal speech. And that's the first time I remember he said, look, if you don't have borders, you don't have a country. And the featured speaker on the 2014, the featured speaker was Sarah Palin, who was speaking Saturday afternoon.
That's right. That's
and
right.
I remember doing a column and saying that CPAC was taken over by Trump because he had the most enthusiasm
of
anybody, better than Palin.
I'm not even talking about the enthusiasm to the speech, which was very well received. I'm talking about enthusiasm for walking around.
Right, that's right.
And again, think about it. He makes a statement, which he obviously you just recited, but it gets a lot of credit for it, which is fine, but how common sense is that? If you don't have a board, you don't have a country.
Sense.
Of course.
And that's pretty common
sense. Second grader knows that.
Yeah,
but that's where we are today.
Yep. It was pretty common sense. And I remember he stole the show from Palin. He stole it from Rand Paul, who was, you know, one of the favorites to run for president. And then in 2015, he came back and Jeb Bush was running. And Jeb Bush bussed in 300 people from different places in order to have kids with signs on that they had to pay to get there. I remember all this stuff, Governor. I got to go.
I didn't know that, but
I remember all this stuff. John Frederick's Radio Network. It's always good to have you on, Governor
Great
Bob
talk.
Ehrlich. Thank you for being with us. I really
Great
appreciate
talking to you,
it.
My friend. Take care. Godspeed, everyone.
Joining us now, Brian Cannon. Brian of One Virginia 2021. Great to have you with us, Brian.
Morning, John. Glad to be on, man. It's a good day.
Okay, now it should be. Now this your bill, which was I rated as a long shot coming into this thing because the Democrats, I didn't think you could get them to vote for it. Like the Republicans have gerrymandered. Now they were going to get the gerrymander and the hell with the people. But you got this done. Explain what happened with your redistricting bill, which is nonpartisan in the way it should be. How'd you get it done? What happens next?
So on Saturday evening, the bill passed the Senate 40-0 and the House 83-15. So we didn't just squeak this thing by. We ran up the score a little bit, and that's really good to hear. The next step is working to pass it again next year, which I think should be easier, though who knows with what our politics are doing right now, and also to add in some additional enabling legislation, just code changes that make it more open, more transparent, more citizen involvement, and kind of clearer rules that keep our localities together, because you shouldn't have these cities, counties, and towns split up seven ways to Sunday. We got to keep them together. So we got more to do, but this was a huge first victory, and I couldn't be more thrilled.
Now, Brian, your organization, Win Virginia 2021, remember when you were on Friday at the speaker's office, the Republicans had inserted some language that really diluted the nonpartisan fairness aspect of your bill, trying to tie it to different results and things of that nature, but kind of just diluting the whole thing. But you got that stripped out, right?
Yeah, thank God. It's gone.
So basically, you pass this again in the 2020 House, which, look, mm-hmm. 40-0 in the Senate, that's a done deal, right? They're not going to get 21 no votes.
Yeah.
And they only got 17 votes in the House, so no way this is not going to pass. So you do it again. It gets on the ballot as a constitutional amendment or a referendum?
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah, constitutional amendment. And if it passes, which is going to pass with a huge margin, it'll be on the November 2020 ballot, which will be the presidential election ballot with Trump and the Democrat and Warner and the Republican. Going to be a big turnout. You guys will pass that. And then when is it actually implemented?
So it starts, I think the, like, whatever the Tuesday is that's election day, I think, like, the next week is certification, and then it's done.
It's done.
Then it's certified, and it's a constant, it's part of Virginia's constitution, and it's a good framework going forward. We'll get started right away, or have that, those people get started right away, and get them to get rolling and start to make this thing a reality. Now, our job then as an organization, and what we should all be doing as citizens, is being a watchdog on our government, and that's exactly the role we'll play, but it'll be a hell of a lot easier now that we've got these transparency provisions, open meetings, open data, all that stuff, and we'll be watching closely to make sure this goes as well as we hoped.
I'm excited for you guys. So it passes in November 2020. You certify it. When would we get a new map?
We'll get new maps probably that spring of 2021. Last decade, or this past cycle, we got maps, I think, in late April is when they were passed mm-hmm. and signed. Mm-hmm. So we'll get them late April, maybe early May.
Well, you've got to be excited about this. Brian, how long have you worked on this?
Our organization's 5 years old. I've been the executive director of it for four. And I was advocating for this when I was in law school and even before that. So it's been over a decade. It's really gratifying. And John, let me say, I can't thank you enough for your help, because you help getting people. This is a wonky issue that is easy to not care about, except when you realize how darn important it is. And you've helped us do that. So, John, thank you for that. I really appreciate it.
I tell you what, you are the model of persistence and stick-to-itiveness, because you, I remember you've been calling up to get on my show for years. And of course, I've already told the story. The Republicans had a 67-33 majority, so I wanted nothing to do with a fair process. I wanted the Republicans to keep cheating because they had the advantage. So I was all for that. And I blew you off for a long period of time, like a cheap suit in the rain. In fact, the only time I had you on was when I bumped into